Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL's Week 9 and 10. We'll have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will talk about the NBA as the association is back in full strength. And of course, we will have our college football two-minute drill. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And also follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news and coverage, especially with today being such an important day with the NFL trade deadline, along with college football playoff coming out and all the other stuff. So make sure that you guys tap into that. But as always, this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Ho, welcome in. We're on early. I'm recording this early on a Tuesday morning, so you guys will get this. This is one of my favorite style shows. You guys know I love the Insta release shows. This will be an Insta release show. I'm recording this actually before 8 o'clock local time in Central Time. I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, of course. So this is before 8 o'clock Central Time. My goal is to get this out to you guys. Like I said, as soon as I am done, you guys will know. Huge day. So first of all, in this country, it is election day in America. So presidential election day, we will decide a new president for our country. So that is a big day, first and foremost. This is not a political show, so that is all the time we're going to spend on that topic. We're also going to talk about the NFL, as NFL Week 9 concluded last night. NFL Week 10 is already off to a roaring start, as we have NFL trade deadline news popping off left and right. Kind of started last night, it's continuing this morning. We'll have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, a couple of down weeks, but we're going to get back on track with that, and we are still above the professional betting number line. Of course, I got the NBA, and we're going to have a college football two-minute drill, a segment that you guys absolutely love because it gets a lot of your information in a short amount of time. But all the housekeeping stuff out of the way, thank you guys for joining me. I'm happy to be with you guys this morning. My voice sounds a little weird, coming off of personal note, coming off of small sickness, nothing crazy. But I've got guys that I coach high school football, and those of you who are in the Baton Rouge, South Louisiana area, know last Friday it was a monsoon all game, all day Friday, and so we coasted it and woke up Saturday a little sick. Because I got rained on for 3 hours. And supposed to be some weather coming through the South Louisiana area this weekend. So it'll get complicated as far as LSU Alabama's play Saturday. Out here we have like high school football games are getting moved to Thursday. My school, Baker High, already plays on Thursday. So it's a little bit better there. But all in all, you know, so if I sound a little weird or if I sniff a little bit, I'm sorry. Again, coming off a little bit of a sickness. But anyway, enough of the personal stuff. Let's get down to business. NFL Week 9. We're going to start off with my South Louisiana fans. Dennis Allen has been fired as head coach of the New Orleans Saints. this is a fire you can look at multiple ways. I think that you can have a tough season and keep your job, right? Because the Saints started off 2-0. Clint Kubiak was the head coach. People were discussing how amazing the offense was. They put like 40 something points back to back weeks. And then the injury started. One by one, people started getting hurt all over the place. And then they are now losers of 7 straight, near 2-7. An injury riddled season with competence, the coach can keep his job. It's unpopular for the fans, but if they go out every day, they make smart decisions, and they just look around and go, man, if that's Chris Olave instead of Bub Means, he probably scores. Man, if that left guard is Cesar Ruiz, he probably, you know what I'm saying, he gets that block. Like, if you're looking at the plan was in place, right, the attitudes are in place, the locker room is still believing, the players are still behind you, and they're just beat to hell, and they're all on the injury table. It's like, okay, we can't even blame the coach here. Like, we're just beat up. You can survive. And I've seen that. Like, I've seen, like, Mike Vrabel had a couple of offseasons in Tennessee. They were still running through a wall behind Mike Vrabel. He just didn't have the talent. And so it's kind of like, okay, you can't really blame Mike Vrabel here. There's no one on the team. Zach Taylor's had a couple of offseasons in Cincinnati. I still want Zach Taylor fired, but he's survived, I think, off the strength of they at least play hard for him. It's just some year, it just doesn't go well. And coaching every year, unless you're Mike Tomlin, you're going to dip, right? Like Bill Belichick, I think off the strength of his legacy and the fact that some years that James got injured, whatever, stayed probably longer in New England than he needed, than he should have been. But, like, unless you're Mike Tomlin, you're going to have down years. You're going to have years where you go 5-12. You're going to have years where it just goes, you know, 8-9. Like, it's going to happen. So, that being the case, you can survive that time. What you cannot survive is when the players, when you lose the locker room. Whenever you lose the locker room, it's over. It doesn't matter if you're 12-5. It doesn't matter if you're 5-12. It doesn't matter if you're 7-2. It doesn't matter if you're 2-7. Whenever you lose the locker room, it's over. And that's what happened to Dennis Allen. In the statement from the Saints with Ms. Gail Benson, owner of the Saints, EVP / GM, Mickey Loomis, they both mentioned the injuries, right? They both mentioned how it was a harder season probably because of the injuries. Like, the injuries were an acknowledged factor. I think the injuries bought him more time. I think the injuries, instead of the team being allowed to go 7 straight, maybe he gets fired at 5 straight if the team is healthy, or 4 straight even if the team is healthy. But I think they were trying to give him some room to operate, some room to kind of figure it out by due to the injuries. But there's reports now that Ms. Benson was now meeting with players to get their feel of the team. Cam Jordan put out a tweet, man, saying basically start off with, man, we lost to Carolina. Y'all deserve better. We deserve better. You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all deserve better. We know it. Alvin Kamara started to chirp a little bit. Like, whenever your stars start coming out and they're not directly digging into it, I think Kamara made a statement like, we have confidence in the roster, we don't have confidence in other things. I think it was Kamara. I want to attribute it to Kamara, and if it's not, I'm sorry. I apologize. But I'm pretty sure it was Kamara. He came out and said, like, something to the extent of, we have confidence in the roster, but we don't have confidence in other things. Okay, well, if it ain't the roster, it's either management or the coach, right? And so, and honestly, you can't really, if it's, you know, the management team put together the roster. So there's only one person left, and that's the coach. And then earlier today, post Dennis Allen's firing, they asked interim coach, and I cannot think of his name. I apologize to him already. But they asked him, because there was a decision late in the game, the Carolina game, where a punt situation came up. And, you know, it's one of those, it wasn't a punt situation. They were close to midfield, and they tried to draw the Saints offsides. Darren Rizzi is his name. So they asked him, what are your thoughts on that decision? Like, to try and jump them offsides on fourth. It's like fourth and one for like the 40-something, right around midfield. And he said, like, I thought it was the wrong decision. And it later to a show, you go for that I think trying to draw them off sides was a bad call. Like, and so it was like even his own staff and Coach Rizzi was Dennis Allen's assistant head coach. Like, he was as high on the list as you can be, which is very common in the NFL. The assistant head coach is usually the special teams coordinator, I guess, because special teams has less duties, I suppose. And then they're always the interim head coach because, again, I guess less duties. But, like, you know, even his own staff appeared to have been lost. Like, that's when you can't recover. It was a party on Twitter. For Saints fans, so many memes, so many celebratory posts about Dennis Allen being fired. So, yeah, clearly Saints Nation was out. The players were out. Now with Coach Rizzi and how he's answering questions, the staff was out. You know, the owners going to the players. It was a situation where, okay, stuff has to change. And so that's what happened. Stuff changed. Dennis Allen has been fired as coach of the New Orleans Saints. But moving into less grim things, less job-related, kind of sad in a way. But the Dallas Cowboys are banged up. Now, the Dallas Cowboys are already in a bad spot in their division, all right? So they're behind Philly and Washington. They're in a dogfight with the Giants as far as the NFC East. As it sits right now, in the NFC East, you have Washington at top with 7-2. Led by Jaden Daniels, runaway rookie of the year. Philadelphia's are behind them at 6-2. Dallas is 3-5, and the Giants are 2-7. Now, everyone possesses a division win except for the Giants, which is odd. I think everyone's played the Giants. Looking at this, Washington, Philly, and Dallas's only division games have been against Giants, and the Giants have lost all four. So that's pretty wild. But if you look at the point differential, Washington's plus 74. The Philly is plus 44. And then Dallas is minus 54. And the Giants are minus 63. So, I mean, it's bad right now in Dallas. And then you start getting news left and right yesterday. So going into the game Sunday, Jerry Jones mentions, or going to the, that Trayvon Diggs has a small calf tear, and he's going to play through it. Now, he went through his pregame warm-up. He played. I don't recall anything he did in the game. So, which, as a corner, could be a good thing. Although there was that one play where they ran like a bunch stack. Atlanta ran like a bunch stack situation, and Trayvon's clearly confused on what they're running. And then they ended up kind of getting leveraged, and then he doesn't take his man across. It was an obvious pick play. He doesn't take his man across, and it's an easy wheel route touchdown. So that's the only thing I've seen from him play, but that wasn't a calf tear. That was just a mental lapse of not knowing the defense. That had nothing to do with a calf. So he's battling through an alleged calf tear. CeeDee Lamb hurts his shoulder during the game. It turns out he has a sprained AC joint. Now, his shoulder is sore, but he's going to try to play through it. Please, for my fantasy team, please play through it. And then Dak hurt a hamstring towards the end of that game. And they thought it was a minor situation. He's going to be fine. Maybe misses a game. Now it's reported he's going to miss weeks because his hamstring injury was worse than originally thought. So Dak's going to miss weeks. Like, you're already 3-5. You're 3.5 games back in your division. You're not going to win your division. Philly and Washington are going to win, and the other one's going to get the other NFC East spot. I think the NFC East is going to put two teams in. I think the North's going to fill the rest of the playoff bracket in. I think it's going to be South champ, West champ, three North teams, and then two East teams. It's kind of how I see it coming out. It may be decided barreling down the last track because the West could be fighting that seventh spot. It's gonna be a dog fight on the NFC. But back to what I'm saying, you're not gonna get the East. You're probably not gonna get your the second East spot. I think the East is gonna put two teams in. Philly and Washington are gonna be the two teams. So because of this, you're now hoping to catch one of these other teams. You're not gonna have your starting quarterback for weeks. Your star receiver is beat up. He's probably two shots away from really damaging the AC joint. Stephon Diggs apparently has a calf tear. Deron Bland, you activated and then didn't play. Micah Parsons is still out. Like, this is bad in Dallas. Zeke is not having disciplinary issues and it's like causing a ruckus in the locker room and stuff. And he didn't even try with the team to the last game. Like, this is going left in Dallas very quickly. And I think this is gonna finally cost Mike McCarthy his job. Now, I think Mike McCarthy should have been gone from Dallas. But I think this is going to cost Matt McCarthy his job, similar to Dennis Allen, where you can survive a year like this, but you got to have belief. And there's no belief left to me in the Dallas-Fort Worth area behind Mike McCarthy. He was being openly slandered on Pat McAfee's show. Like, I just don't think there is a lot of belief left in Dallas with Mike McCarthy. Speaking of injury news, the Tennessee Titans got hit as well. Lloyd Cushenberry, their pretty standout center. The team fears he has a torn Achilles. Now, usually the phrase the team fears is one of those. The team fears it because they did field tests and they pretty much know. Like, it's they have all kind of field tests. Like, they find out ACLs and Achilles, like stuff with obvious touching. They can touch it and move it and pull it around. And it's one of those, like, you can, it's one of the things you can know instantly just by maneuvering certain parts of the body. You can know, okay, it looks like a torn Achilles. It looks like an Achilles injury because the way he planted and the shutter, and they can touch it and, you know, run, you know, you can do things to find out. So, it's rare that the fear isn't confirmed in MRI, but they fear that he tore his Achilles, which will lose him for the season, which hurts the interior of the Tennessee Titans line. Now, the Titans are not going to make the playoffs, obviously, but when you are developing a young quarterback, and that's what they're in the process of doing, either Mason Rudolph or Will Levis. The team seems to love Levis. They picked Levis. So either Will Levis or Mason Rudolph, because right now the Titans sit at 2-6. The 7th seed is 5-4. Like, Titans are not gonna make the playoffs, right? But you are developing a quarterback, and one thing that is huge for developing a quarterback is for having the interior of the offensive line solidified and protected, especially guards and a guard. I mean, that is the interior, but especially the center, because that center is the communicator. He's the other eyes on the field. Like, if the center is setting protections, now the quarterback has to do it. If the quarterback is setting protections, the center has to do it. Like, that relationship has to be hand in hand. Like, they need to be best friends, basically, the center and the quarterback, as the two leaders of an offense, just from structurally. Now, not necessarily who's the captain, all that stuff, whatever, but structurally, the two leaders are the center and the quarterback. And that is huge. So if he's out, and then also they lose Quandre Diggs to a Liz Frank injury that he needs to have season ending surgery on. You go into the year, Tennessee actually had one of the better safety combos in the league, Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. Two hitters, but two guys that can make plays at all times. Definitely going to be physical secondary spearheaded by those two. Now you have neither. Jamal Adams is a free agent, if memory serves me correctly. And Quandre Diggs now out for the season with an injury. So one of your hallmarks of your team was going to be your safety duo. And now you have neither safety of the duo to even show off and showcase. So brutal there. Jameson Williams, however, he's back. His two-game suspension has been fulfilled, and so he's been officially reinstated by the NFL. Christian McCaffrey is back. They opened a 21-day practice window, and he was practiced that day. Like, now they opened it like on Sunday, and he practiced like Monday. Now they opened it Monday. He was on the field yesterday with a chance to play this weekend. So the reigning NFL Offensive Player of the Year has a chance to be back on the field to bolster the 49ers offense, who's starting to get some of their talent back. Debo's back, Kittle's there. Now you add in Christian McCaffrey. You're starting to get some of those weapons back. Of course, you lost Ayuk for the season, but you're starting to get some of those weapons back to help Brock Purdy and to really run truly the Mike Shanahan offense. And you can run with anybody in the offense, but it's hard to have the dual threat with the pass game, and we don't have a true receiving back in the offense. So that is what Christian McCaffrey provides to you, is that true receiving back. Oh, and then just a little recap on some games that stood out to us. NFL Week 9. Monday Night Football was wild last night. That was a better game than I anticipated. I thought it'd be a good game. I think the weather helped. And I always say the one thing that equalizes anything in sports is weather. Now, it's not wild weather like how Arizona was hailing and they have a retractable roof. So it was open and then hail started. And then so hail was inside a State Farm Arena. It was wild. But it was raining pretty well for most of the second half. For most of the game, really, between Kansas City and Tampa Bay. So that kind of evened out some of the gap. I think Monday night at home, Tampa probably wins by 10 plus points or more. But I think that kind of evened out the number, the gap a little bit by having those two teams playing bad weather. And it was a showdown. Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, what do you expect? They did it. They did it in college. They've been doing it in the pros. Those two players go at each other. Those two Texas quarterbacks. It's weird. It's like, if you get Baker's older than Mahomes, like by a couple years, because when Mahomes on his college visit, Texas Tech, Baker was his host. So, right? So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, and then they had the epic duel where they both go for like 700 yards plus, Texas Tech and Oklahoma. Like, it's insane what these twos have gone through. And Baker still has not beaten Mahomes in the pros. I think Baker was 2-0 against him in college, and now he's 0-3 against him in the pros. They battle back and forth. Baker puts together a drive, man. And I think if Baker gets the ball back in overtime, I think he marches down and scores, because he puts together that drive in the regulation when he had to have it. A couple of great Russell Gage catches. And Baker gets in the end zone, and then, you know, Mahomes gets the ball in overtime. And, like, the fourth drive they did at that game, like 11, 12 plays, it was, like, the same script. 12 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. It was, like, that was, like, the script for, like, four of the drives. 11 plays, 69 yards, 8 minutes on the clock, touchdown. 13 plays, 72 yards, 9 minutes off the clock, touchdown. They did it like four times, and the fourth time was in overtime. And that ended the game on a Kareem Hunt touchdown, which I thought cost me my fantasy week. Turns out I won by like a point. So shout out fantasy football. But that was a great battle. Like I said, the rain added a different element to it. Having just coached in the rain Friday, I had no sympathy for any of those guys on last night. But absolutely great contest. Speaking of overtime, the Los Angeles Rams win their game in Seattle in overtime with a beautiful throw and catch. He was getting pass interfered with. They didn't call it, but he snags it in one hand in the end zone. I think DeMarcus Robinson, hell of a catch to win the game. The Geno Smith brings the Seahawks back in Seattle. Great game there. And then the Minnesota Vikings, man, they keep winning. I can't put my finger on it. I can't go, that's why. I mean, they're led by the defense, obviously. But it's also a situation where they keep finding ways to win games. It's like, it's not to the level of the Chiefs, where the Chiefs keep finding a way to stay undefeated. But the Minnesota Vikings just find a way to keep winning. And like, it's just every single week, it's not like they're inventing ways, but they're finding a way. Like, it was 7-0, and it looked awful in the first half. Like, the offense was inept. Like, it was 7-0 at halftime, and it's like they're losing to Joe Flacco and the Colts, and Darnold has like 2-3 turnovers already. Like, it's rough. And then the second half, he cleans his act up. They win the second half 21-6. Darnold finished 28-34 for 290 and 3 touchdowns, and they win. And it's just like, of course they do, because they've been doing it all season. The Vikings now sit at 6-2, which is something that 2.5 months ago, you would have said impossible when J.J. McCarthy came out and he was out for the season. Like, but they sit at 6-2 in the best division in football, the NFC North. So pretty, pretty wild there in Minnesota. But up next, we're going to shift to NFL Week 10, talking about what's going down there, along with the trade deadline. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into NFL Week 10, which, of course, is highlighted by the NFL trade deadline, which, of course, is today. So the NFL trade deadline hits at 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock if you're in Mountain Time, and 1 o'clock if you're on the West Coast. So this is the last day acquisitions can be made via trade. So if you have teams like the Ravens are looking for pass defense help in general, this is your last day to acquire it via trade. And it's not like the NBA where there's a buyout market. Like, that doesn't happen in the NFL. Like, you know, talented role players don't get bought out or released or whatever, and then you just pick them up out of free agency off waivers. Like, it doesn't happen in the NFL. So your last day to really acquire talent that you believe is going to change your team is today. Like I said, you have about another 7 hours or so to make deals happen. But we already have a couple of deals being made. I would deem these as deadline deals, just because of, you know, when and where they were done. So yesterday, 19 hours ago, the Denver Broncos traded edge Baron Browning to the Arizona Cardinals for a 6th-round pick. Now, this was done primarily because the Broncos and edge Jonathan Cooper agreed to a 4-year contract extension worth $60 million with $33.1 million guaranteed. So you had another guy in the pipeline. You had another guy, so you was able to get an asset for somebody who was probably going to leave after the season anyway. And then earlier today, right before we started recording this podcast, actually, the Cleveland Browns traded Za'Darius Smith and a 2026 7th-round pick to the Detroit Lions for a 2025 5th-round pick and a 2026 6th-round pick. So the Lions, of course, have been looking for edge rush help ever since Aiden Hutchinson went down. Za'Darius Smith was a name that we heard a lot, and so ultimately he goes and fills in that spot. And he has like $605,000 the rest of this season guaranteed. And then he has a cap hit of $11 million non-guaranteed next season. That if he balls out this season, is it possible Detroit grabs the $11 million? Slim. I think that if anything, they'd want to add maybe a void year to pull the cap hits apart. But more than likely, he's a few couple month rental for Detroit. And has the opportunity to go get money in free agency. And then about 40 minutes ago, the Chicago Bears traded Khalil Herbert or Hebert, one of the two. I'm going to say Herbert, to the Cincinnati Bengals for a 2025 7th-round pick. That trade is unique because it is the second time since 1973 that the Cincinnati Bengals have done an in-season player acquisition via trade. So it's their second time since 73 they've done a trade during the season. They traded Carlos Dunlap to the Seahawks in 2020. And then, of course, the Khalil Hebert trade today. Again, only the second time that they have acquired a player via trade in season since 1973. So an incredibly rare thing to happen in Cincinnati, but it stresses their need to get a running back in the building due to Zach Moss's injury. He is out indefinitely. So that is highlighted by the urgency that you see from the Bengals even doing a trade, because as we see, that's not something that they ever do. But as trades come through the pipeline, if they come through the pipeline while we are recording the show, obviously, then, of course, we will discuss them and it will be posted. We'll discuss them as they happen. But that's all that's been moving so far. There's a Marshawn Lattimore rumors that he could be moved today. As being the only player the Saints probably wouldn't move today. So there's Marshawn Lattimore rumors. There is Chase Young rumors. I don't really see the smoke. I don't really see the fire in that. There's Chase Young rumors. There's J.C. Horn rumors. So there's a few guys out there in the market that are out there. But we'll see what happens. Like, so over the next, see, it's 8:30 now. Over the next 6.5 hours, if my math is correct, we'll see what goes down. But let's get into NFL Week 10. Speaking of those Bengals, they open up NFL Week 10. 10. They open it up with Bengals. They're the Bengals, of course. They open up at the Ravens in a divisional matchup. So the NFC North is kind of weird, or the AFC North is kind of weird. A lot of the division games are at the end. Like the Steelers are their last 7 games, play 6 division opponents, or 5 of their last 6, something like that. So now Bengals are going to go at the Ravens. This game is not in Jack's pack. I think the Ravens are 4.5-point favorites. I'm going to pick the Ravens here, but I think the Bengals have a shot. And the reason, and the Bengals have a good shot. And the reason why I say that is, whenever you are a division opponent, first of all, the game's always close. Secondly, the Bengals are going to come off their best offensive performance in what feels like years. Now, it was against an inferior opponent, but that didn't matter for a long time in Cincinnati. Like, inferior, like, superior, it didn't matter. The fact that they played the same. They Burrow throws 5 touchdowns. I mean, they just looked like an offensive juggernaut. And if Baltimore doesn't fix their pass defense in the next 6.5 hours, Cincinnati is going to be able to torch that defense. Now, because we just saw in the last game, they played Burrow, went for like, 5 touchdowns, and I was excoriating Zach Taylor because you basically gave the Ravens the ball back in overtime after Lamar gave it to you. You just said, oh, here, buddy, take it back. Like, it's insane because you could have got a division win. Like I said, who knows? That might change the whole landscape of the season because now instead of Burrow thinking he has to win 7-9, it could have been 6-9. Like a lot of different things could have been done differently. Momentum could have changed or whatever. Because that was the root of my Zach Taylor rant a few weeks ago on the YouTube show and the podcast was about the Ravens game. So we just saw what Joe Burrow did to your secondary a few weeks ago. Zach Taylor's not an idiot. You probably win that. The Bengals should have won that game. That being said, you go to Baltimore now, short week. So it's not much of a game plan. You play Sunday. You got to give them, it's a very mental day on Monday. You do some light stuff on Tuesday. You travel if you're Cincinnati Wednesday, or you do a real good walkthrough on Wednesday if you're Baltimore, and you play again on Thursday. You're not probably doing anything physical all week. It's a lot of mental reps and game planning. You may walk through a set 6-7 times, especially on defense, but it's not a lot of on the field action against a practice squad. Like, it's not happening this week. It's a short week. That being said, who you are or is who you are. It's not even you can't really change a lot on a short week. Again, they got about 6.5 hours to figure out if they're going to be a better pass defense going forward. Otherwise, I expect a big day from the Bengals. However, I think Baltimore still wins this game because I expect a big day from Derrick Henry. What's one advantage of a shortened week? A hell of a running back. A hell of a rushing attack. Because physically, you're not... What's I'm looking for here? Physically, you're not fully recovered from Sunday to Thursday. You're just not. So the interior guys that's been taking on those hits on those linemen and those linebackers been getting in there, they're not physically recovered by the time Thursday hits. And so now King Henry at 1,000 pounds, but at let's be real, 250 pounds, is sitting there on a roll as the best back in football right now. And he's just staring you in the face like, yep, I'm coming forward. Straightforward, repeatedly in this game. So I think it's Baltimore's recipe to victory. I think they get a Bengals turnover. The Bengals have no real running back right now. And I think Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson make this game real short. You know, how Kansas City was hitting Tampa for 12 plays, 76 yards, 8 minutes touchdown. I think the Ravens are going to put together a couple of those in the first half. And they may even go into the first half. Okay, we have an update. Jerry Jones has stated that it is likely for Dak Prescott to go on injury reserve. It is likely that Dak Prescott goes on injury reserve. Per Jerry Jones on The Fan. His weekly radio spot. So it is likely that Dak Prescott goes to injury reserve. If he goes on IR, he misses at least 4 games. just the way the IR rules work. So that is what's going on there in Dallas. But I just think Baltimore, back to the game, I just think Baltimore shortens the game. And even if they go in the halftime 14-10, the time of possession is like 18 minutes to 12, 20 minutes to 10. It's one of those like, send them a quick strike here, and then Baltimore walks down the field again. Or 17-10 Baltimore, and they've had the ball for 21 out of 30 minutes. Like, it is just your defense walking out the field going, oh my God, get us a break. And the Ravens are like, we're going to see you at the halftime, buddy. It's coming again. And I think Baltimore ultimately wins the game 27-23 due to the fact that they're going to lean time after time on the Bengals. Usually explosiveness as far as like crazy scores. Like, I don't expect the repeat of the game a few weeks ago. Baltimore is -6. I feel like it's too big of a spread. I think it'll be a 4-point game. So if I were to bet this game, it would be on the Bengals side here with the +6. Because I think they're just going to lean on the Bengals. But the Bengals gave it a quick strike through that offense, through that Ravens defense, rather. So I think it's going to be a close game, definitely closer than 6. I will say 27-23. But it will definitely be a dogfight and not something that I think is going to be a blowout by any means. Niners and Bucks. Now, this is going to be an interesting game. And it's an interesting game in the sense of this is a game where the Bucks have to be thinking in their head, we probably should have beat the Chiefs. We probably should have taken care of them. We should have been ahead, you know, just a little bit further up in the NFC South, or trying to catch the Atlanta Falcons. We should have had the defending champions giving them their first loss. If you're the Niners, you're kind of in a desperate spot. And the reason why you're in a desperate spot is because your division's like really good. You're looking at probably the second best division in football based on the average record. I mean, the AFC though is being dragged down by Cleveland. So yeah, the NFC West is probably the second best division in football by record. And you are currently dealing with that division. You've got to get every win you can get. Because looking at the division standings, the NFC West has 5-4 Arizona at the top of it, but it's 4-4 Los Angeles Rams, 4-4 San Francisco 49ers, and 4-5 Seattle Seahawks. So the entire division is a game apart. So every single win you get matters. And there's no awful team. Yeah, no, they're second best division because the NFC North, the worst team is 4-4. Their worst team is 4-5. So yeah, they're the second best division in the football, and the whole division's a game apart. So this is a game for the Niners that you could find yourself, you can wake up next Tuesday morning, as the number one seed in your division and having a chance at the home playoff game, which would be huge, especially if you get back into health. And again, Christian McCaffrey is allegedly coming back for this game. So that's something that can give them a major boost in San Fran as far as winning this football game. If you're the Tampa Bay Bucks, you have to continue to parlay success. You got a lot of pressure on Patrick Mahomes. You're able to hit him. On that last drive, you didn't. But also, you could not stop the run when you needed to. You did for most of the game. And then that last couple of drives, Kareem Hunt got off. And it was just 7 yards, 6 yards, 7 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards. It was just forward, forward, forward. And it was just, you know, so you have to clean that up. If you're going to play San Fran, you cannot come in with a weak run defense. You'll get tortured. So I think they have to clean that up. Oddly, I've got the Buccaneers here. I've got the Bucs winning this game. I've got them winning it relatively close, kind of low scoring, 20-17. I don't think either of these offenses are going to be explosive. I think both defenses are going to hold the other offense down. I think 20-17. Tampa fixes a little bit of their mistakes, kind of learn from last week, or learn from yesterday, rather, in terms of how they should perform late in the game. So I've got Tampa 20-17. Pittsburgh at Washington. We won't pick it because it's in Jack's pack. But this is a very interesting game. This is kind of old versus young. This is new era versus old school in terms of kind of how the rosters are built. Pittsburgh is hard-nosed. They're gritty. They're tough. They embody Mike Tomlin. He's been there, 17 years, something like that. So everything about the Pittsburgh Steelers roster construction, how they're mentally stable, how they battle, is all Mike Tomlin. Even from the quarterback position, you've got a guy in Russell Wilson who's a grinder, who's a hard work kind of guy who puts his nose to the grindstone. Wily veteran type player. He's looking at every stage on how to be a better leader and a football player. And that's what you got in Russell Wilson. That you got going for you in Russell Wilson. So that is huge in that game. And then, of course, you got the new school Washington Commanders. You've got Jaden Daniels, the most electric rookie we've seen in a very long time. You have Dan Quinn, who is kind of a world-class players coach. You have Cliff Kingsbury, one of the original young gun offensive minds. You have Terry McLaurin, like he's having fun for the first time in his career. If you got a defense that is fast and they are physical and they are looking to, they're a little bit smaller, they're a little bit skinnier than maybe those rough and tough Pittsburgh Steelers teams. Even today, they're a little bit skinnier, but they are fast and they fly around everywhere. So it's going to be definitely a good game there. Lions at Texans, a game I can pick because not in my Jack's pack. Lions at Texans is huge. If you're the Detroit Lions, you're currently leading the best. You're currently leading the best division in football. It feels like the NFC North are setting best division records at this point in the season. Blah, every week. And so you're ahead of that division. You picked up a big division win on the road at Green Bay. Now you go to a Houston team that probably feels like they were embarrassed. Because to me, they were embarrassed. They went to the Jets, Thursday Night Football. A lot of pundits, myself included, thought the smart money was on them, +2. They're going to win outright anyway. So perfect, right? And you get destroyed. You get manhandled up front. CJ Stroud has the worst game of his career. You lost Stephon Diggs week before to a torn ACL. You got embarrassed, right? But I even had a long extended week. And you get a Lions team that just had one of those emotional ups. Now, Dan Campbell is not an emotional letdown kind of coach. He's not a coach that if they're up, they're not going to just fall off the face of the earth. Plus, the Texans is not a team that you would fall face first into. I just think the motivation's on Houston's side. And I think that the Houston Texans will ultimately win. I can't pick it because it is in Jack's pack. There's a typo in my rundown, which is why I didn't see it. But I cannot pick it, so I will shut my mouth on this game, and I will move forward to the Broncos at the Chiefs. This game is an important one, mainly because this game is always, to me, weird. It's always a weird game for me. Broncos at Chiefs, always odd. It's always something happens that shouldn't normally happen. Like, it's just a weird, weird game. I think this game's going to be closer than the experts think. The Chiefs have not put together an A game or a B game, to my opinion, all season. Yet they're still undefeated. And I think if there's one coach and there's one kind of situation that is able to manifest itself into taking advantage of that, it would be a division rival and a smart head coach in Sean Payton. Sean Payton and Andy Reid, to me, kind of exist on the same plane in terms of their ability to coach. Two people in the league openly was after Patrick Mahomes. It was Sean Payton and Andy Reid. Sean Payton went to Texas Tech, saw Patrick Mahomes work out and flew, got back on the plane and said, no one say anything. No one say anything. We're not going to. It doesn't leave this plane. That's who we're going to pick. Because no one else is looking at him. Oh my God. That's the next one. No one say anything. That's going to be our guy. And who's the team that jumped right in front of them and drafted Patrick Mahomes? The Kansas City Chiefs, off the strength of Brett Veach and Andy Reid. Right, so these two guys are on a similar playing field. They're on a similar plane. And I think if, you know, of course, history changes. If Mahomes ends up in New Orleans, I think Sean Payton is probably still in New Orleans. Who knows what happens to Kansas City? Because there have been the Alex Smith show. Like, who knows what happens in KC? Maybe Andy Reid finds somebody else, but... You know, he doesn't have the dynasty he has. Maybe New Orleans is 2-3 times champions by now. So, I mean, who knows, like I said, what happens if Sean Payton gets his wish and he's able to land Patrick Mahomes. But this is going to be an interesting game there. This one really isn't. It really isn't in our Jack's pack. We can pick it. I've got the Chiefs, but it's gonna be close. I mean, I'm talking like walk off field goal Harrison Butker style close. It's gonna be a close ball game, but I still got the Chiefs. But up next, we're gonna shift to our NFL betting segment, Jack's pack. Welcome back into the show. And I know I've been kind of long-winded on my first two topics. The, you know, 20-minute opener, 20-minute second segment. I'm sorry. I apologize. But a lot of stuff's happening. And it's the NFL trade deadline. I do apologize. But our last NFL segment of the day, our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Now, we went back-to-back 4-1. Back-to-back 2-3. So we're kind of balancing out a little bit. Our percentage went up to as high as 63. It has come down to 58. But remember, at the start of the year, I said, what is the professional betting number? 56 to 57%. Which means if we straight bet all our picks, we would be still in a positive, we'd still be at positive money. Which is what the goal is, to have positive money at the end of this. 57% covers all your juices. It covers all of your, you know, if you pick all favorites to win, like it covers everything. You always make money if you hit 57% of your picks. So we're at 58%. We're 57.7, but round up 58%. Coming off another 2-3 week. We're going to get this fixed. We're going to get this fixed starting this week. All right? I'm kind of sick of it. So, our favorite number of the week. Not going to lie, I highlighted, circled it. It is our favorite number of the week. This is the number that I have 100% confidence in. Commanders -2.5 versus Pittsburgh. Commanders are in a position here. They're at home. All they got to do is win by a field goal to cover. I think they can pull that off. Like 27-24 wins. 30-33 wins. Like, he's going to win by a field goal. This is a number that I think if this number gets to 3.5, 4.5, I think, well, we have another trade. The Cowboys have just traded for Jonathan Mingo from the Carolina Panthers. So the full trade details are on Just Ask for Social Medias, but it is Jonathan Mingo and a 7th-round pick for a 4th-round pick. Now, Jerry Jones has already spoken about the trade. The Cowboys loved him in the pre-draft process. He was picked before they were able to pick him. And so now Jerry Jones rights a wrong by getting him from Carolina. I don't know, but whatever. Jerry in the interview also gave us an update on Dak Prescott saying he's going to go to injury reserve. So Jerry's just been talking. Anyway, back to the Commanders in Pittsburgh. I think the Commanders are going to win this game by a field goal. Actually, perfectly a field goal. If this game was +3, it's a stay away. Or -3, it's a stay away. But -2.5, they're going to win by a field goal. Commanders get the dub. My second number of the week, Chargers -7.5 versus the Titans. Take the Chargers. Look, Titans suck. Like a lot. Right? Like, they're bad. They're going in without Quandre Diggs. They're probably not going to have Lloyd Cushenberry, which means that the Chargers defense is able to come after whoever's at quarterback, Levis or Rudolph, even more. I don't see the Titans scoring 13 points, which means all the Chargers got to do to win is score 21. And so I got the Chargers here, -7.5. Take the Chargers. Texans, +3 against the Lions. Take the Texans. I think the Texans win outright. Okay, maybe I should have learned my lesson with the Texans. I had them winning out as an outright underdog last week, and it cost me. But I think the Texans right some wrongs here. Like I spoke about in the other session, I think they're motivated. I think they feel like they were embarrassed. I think they feel like they flat out just should have been better. Like, there's no way that they should have lost the game, but lost how they did to the Jets, which was embarrassingly. Like, they just got pummeled physically in that game. There's a lot of motivation here. I think Detroit coming off, you know, a lot of big wins. Maybe they come down a little bit. I think it's going to be a good scoring game on both sides. I don't think either team is going to cause a lot of havoc for the other offense. Houston's going to be probably health dependent. I just think Houston wins the game outright. So take the Texans. Rams -2.5 versus the Dolphins. Take the Rams. Again, this is when the Rams are in the same position that the Niners are in. Talk about their game against the Bucks. You got to keep winning. Like, you're in a division, you don't have a choice. You have to keep winning football games. Again, you're in a division, you have no choice. You got to keep winning. There's no option. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You have to keep winning games in order to try and win your division. I think the Dolphins are near packing in moment. I think they're getting close. I think they're teetering on potentially looking towards next season. And I think the Rams are going to go in there and take advantage of that. And they win the game again. Similar situation like the Commanders. I believe that the Rams are going to win the game, which means all I have to do is win by a field goal and you get the win. So I got the Rams here. And then Vikings -4.5 at the Jags. The Vikings keep finding a way to win football games. They also keep finding a way to cover the spread. Another one of those games where the Jaguars defense is not very good. I don't see the Jaguars scoring more than 20, which means the Vikings have to score 25 to cover. I think they pull that off. Vikings -4.5 over the Jags. We're going to get this 2-3 mess fixed this week. Commanders -2.5 over Pittsburgh. Chargers -7.5 over the Titans. Texans +3 over the Lions. Rams -2.5 over the Dolphins. Vikings -4.5 over the Jags. But up next, we're going to shift to the association, talk about what's going down in the NBA. Welcome back into the show. And now we're finally, after 50 some odd minutes, leaving the NFL, and we are simply shifting to the NBA. The association is back and we are roaring in. We're about 11 days into the new season, so about 2 weeks. We're starting to see some trends. Most teams have played between 5 and 8 games so far, so we're starting to see some trends. We're starting to see some news. Before we go into that, we're going to put prayers up for Greg Popovich. Not sure what his situation is. However, I do know for a fact that if he can coach, he would coach. But he has been sidelined due to a health issue. It happened right before Saturday's game. And he has been sidelined indefinitely due to this health issue. Again, not sure what it is. They have been pretty mum about it. And not that I want to do a whole bunch of digging into a 75-year-old man's health until they were comfortable telling us. But he is out indefinitely. And assistant coach Mitch Johnson will be the acting head coach until Popovich is able to return. So, again, let's keep popping our thoughts and prayers. We're going to be definitely looking forward to his return on the sideline for the Spurs. But let's shift into what's happening in the NBA on the floor. Steph Curry has returned for the Golden State Warriors. He missed a few games due to an ankle injury. However, the Warriors were undefeated in his absence. The team is currently 6-1. They look really good. Buddy Hield is not Klay Thompson. No, he is not. But he can floor space his butt off. And that is huge for the Golden State Warriors, how they want to operate. Draymond Green is looking like a facsimile of the prime of Draymond Green. So that is big for them. Steph Curry is still as efficient as ever. You've got young guys who are running very fast. And Steve Kerr was open about how they wanted to be a very fast team. And so they are running up and down the court at a breakneck pace, trying to score in the first 10, 12 seconds. It's not 7 seconds or less, Phoenix Suns, but they are trying to get up a shot, preferably an open three, within the first 10 or 12 seconds of the shot clock. They are trying to get up and down. And it's kind of the modern NBA, why there are so many threes. Three is worth more than two. But in the NBA, three is worth substantially more than two. A three is worth 50% of a two. It's 150% more than a two. So if I can shoot more threes than you can shoot twos, I have to hit, you know, two-thirds of what you hit, and I'll blow you out of the gym. See what I'm saying? Like, so shooting more threes, especially open threes, you're going to probably win the game. So they're playing math, and they're running up and down the court. It's tiring to guard that far out. We'll have a discussion another day of how you can fix the NBA as far as a TV product. But we're going to have a discussion another day about that. But, however, it is huge going on in Golden State. A lot of people thought with the Klay Thompson move, there's been some moments where Steph does some natural stuff. Like, there's an old edit of little stuff Steph would do with Klay. Out of that, he's doing it so long, it's out of instinct. He did like a catch and did like behind the back to the corner, and no one was standing there, because I think it might have been Buddy Hill, but normally Klay, if Steph's running at the wing, Klay runs to the corner, and so it puts the defense in a bind. You basically force 2-on-1. You guard me, I flip it to Klay. Klay's over in the corner. You guard, you get stuck between us. Steph shoots the wing three. You go to Klay, I shoot the wing three. So the guy came to Steph, and Steph just caught it and went behind the back to the corner, and there was nobody standing there. And you saw his face like, dang. Like, you know what I'm saying? For like my whole career, there's always been a guy in the corner waiting to catch and shoot. There's nobody in the corner. And I think there was a whole edit online about little stuff that, I mean, Klay did something where he's used to getting it from Steph in a certain spot, and then the ball didn't come. So it was, you know, it was both of them kind of playing on muscle memory in two different locations. They're playing the same game, just not with the other person. Like, it was crazy to see the edit, but that was pretty wild. But shout out to the Warriors for still appearing like years ahead of everybody. Oklahoma City and Cleveland are still undefeated. They are the last two undefeated teams left in the NBA. Oklahoma City, expected. Cleveland, not so much. If I had a pick out of the East, it probably would have been Boston. Boston's not undefeated. I think Boston has one loss. But Cleveland and Oklahoma City are still undefeated. And they've played competition. Cleveland has beaten what's left of the Bucks twice. Oklahoma City has played Denver. They've played New Orleans. Like, they've played a couple of good teams as well. And they have come out unscathed, both teams. Cleveland should easily have two losses. Oddly, both against the Bucks. But Donovan Mitchell hits a crazy three to beat the Bucks one time, and then Garland hits a big three to beat them the second time. So oddly, they should be 0-2 against the Bucks, but they made two tough shots over pretty solid defense to keep their undefeated streak alive and to further sink the Bucks in all of their misery. And speaking of the Bucks and their misery, this team feels like it's almost karma what's happening to the Bucks, because currently, they sit at the bottom. They are the last place team in the association on either side, I think. Yeah, no, they're tied with the Utah Jazz for the worst team in basketball. They're both 1-6. I'm going to go to points per game. Okay, so they're not the worst team, because they scored 111 a game. Utah scored 104. But they are the worst team in basketball. Tied with the Jazz. They're bottom in one of the bottom teams in offense. They've lost six straight. They've only won one game, and that was against the beat to hell Philadelphia 76ers. Ever since they fired Adrian Griffin, it feels like, if you guys know the movie The Color Purple, not the musical that came out recently, but like the original with Whoopi Goldberg and etc. Like, if you know the original, like with Oprah Winfrey in it, like, and you know, she said, if they tell you to do right by me, everything you have will fall. Pretty much what it feels like with the Bucks. Like, they fired Adrian Griffin because they didn't play defense good enough, I think, if it was their excuse. You bring in Doc Rivers. At the time you fired Doc Rivers, you were 32-15 or something like that. You've since been under 500. Dame and Giannis are starting to figure it out, and they still can't win games. Giannis is clearly frustrated. Chris Middleton is a shell of his former self. If something, God forbid, ever happens to Brooke Lopez, this team's going to be the worst team in basketball because they can't play defense on the perimeter, and Brooke's the only thing holding down the paint on the inside. They would be the literal worst team in basketball. And they kind of deserve it. Not going to lie. They kind of deserve it. It is what it is. Like, you fired Adrian Griffin for what a lot of people felt like was no reason, and you try to justify it with locker room stuff. Nobody bought that. And so then you bring in Doc Rivers, and you've been a joke and a disaster ever since. What he was supposed to fix, he didn't fix, and he broke what was fixed. So it's just, and you traded away Drew Holiday for Dame, which I can't poo-poo you for wanting to bring in Damian Lillard, but the Drew Holiday thing helped your perimeter defense. Right now, you can't guard a parked chair. You can't guard a parked car. Drew Holiday is one of the best perimeter defenses in the league. He has a case for a top 20 perimeter defensive player ever. Like, and you can't guard a parked car, and you get a non-defensive scoring guard. I don't understand the plan in Milwaukee. I don't think they do either. Giannis won't be there very long. Another disastrous start. The Philadelphia 76ers, they are going through it right now. Mainly off the strength of their hurt. Paul George finally is back. Joel Embiid still is not back. Now, that situation is weird because Embiid, so it came out, he played in the summertime for Team USA, right? And then it comes out he's going to miss the opener due to part of his knee ramp-up process. Now, most people was like, okay, that's kind of bullcrap because you just played for Team USA in the Olympics. His justification for that was 10 to 12 minutes burst at most. You know, in the Olympics, especially as a big man, Embiid might have played 23 minutes in like the most minutes he played in the game. Because Bam Adebayo and AD were still getting hella center minutes. So it was like he was looking like, you know, 10, 12 minute burst in the Olympics. He sat a couple of games. You know, it's different than the 35 minute grind he played in the NBA. 30 minute grind he played in the NBA. And then we took it as when it was announced that he was ramping up, we took it as, oh, he is playing it easy. Like easing his way to the season to try and stay healthy. He already announced he was never doing back-to-backs again, pretty much. Kind of to ease his way in to the season. And then he kind of said that basically it was an injury. And he was like, yeah, he's having a hard time trusting his knee in this ramp-up procedure and this, that, and the third, and so on and so forth. And it was a really weird, like, almost admission, like, that he's hurt. So it's like, when did the injury happen? Was it in Team USA? Now, it didn't look like he was laboring at certain points during the Olympics. That could have been it. But, and now you're frustrated there. He also got into a disagreement. And he shoved a reporter over an article for, the report. The column's been out a while. The part that Embiid didn't like referenced his late brother and son. That part's been taken out of the article and all other stuff. But Embiid, long memory, remembered him, and they got into it. Embiid shoved the guy, allegedly. Not many saw it, but it's definitely, you know, that is what occurred. So, you know, it's just been a frustrating start in Philadelphia, as they too only have one or two wins on the season. The New Orleans Pelicans are going through their usual injury pains. They don't have DeJounte Murray, Herb Jones, CJ McCollum. Zion's had some kind of hamstring thing. It's just typical New Orleans. It's every time you get excited about a team, injuries happen. And it feels like this has been the way since like the old Hornets teams. Like, you know, they got beat up at bad times. AD started to get hurt when he was rolling. When they put the team together with DeMarcus Cousins, Drew Holiday, Rajon Rondo, AD, etc., Boogie tears his hamstring going for a routine rebound up 8 with like 13 seconds left because he was mad because he missed the free throw. Like, it's just like it happens all the time. Zion came in the league hurt and beat up. You know, it just always happens in New Orleans. As a Pelicans fan, it's frustrating. As an NBA fan, you kind of want to see it. Like, just once. Just what this, like, DeJounte, Zion, Brandon. Like, I like that kid to me, see Hawkins, Herb, Trey. Like, New Orleans actually has several good players on their roster. A lot of wing talent. And you just never get a chance to see it. And it only gets ever highlighted by poor coaching decisions by Willie Green. So that's frustrating. And then the rookie class, of course, is being as underwhelming as we expected them to be, as only one of them so far, to my recollection, has scored 15 points or more in a game. And that was Dalton Connect. He scored 18 when the Lakers were getting blown out by the Cavs. So this rookie class is as underwhelming as we expected it to be, especially initially. Now, could 5 years down the line, two or three of them turn into all-star-ish, fringe all-star level players? It's possible. Happens in every draft class. But this class is incredibly underwhelming. But up next, we're going to have our college football two-minute drill. Welcome back into the show, and now we are going to go into one of the faster growing segments as far as popularity into the show, the college football two-minute drill. Now, you guys know the qualifications here. We discuss college football for literally 2 minutes as an ode to college football's newest edition, which is the two-minute warning, and has kind of changed several games, actually late down the stretch, seeing how these college coaches manage the clock in these late-game situations. But you know the rules. We're going to fit as much time and much information in 2 minutes as we humanly can about college football. So the time is up and we start now. So DJ Lagway, quarterback for Florida, the freshman phenom for Florida, has a hamstring injury. Now, he is not able to, he is expected to not play this weekend. However, he has not been ruled out. Now, I don't want him to play this weekend for his long-term health. I like the kid. I like the way he plays. They're playing Texas. So I understand why a guy like Billy Napier, who's on the hot seat, would want him to play. But I think that he's going to have to suffer against Texas and not play the kid, not hurt him any further. Now, USC is switching starting quarterbacks. They're going from Miller Moss, who has played all season, including their big win against LSU, to UNLV transfer Jaden Maiva. If I mispronounce that, my sincerest apologies. Le'Veon Moss, star running back for the Texas A&M Aggies. He's out for the season due to a leg injury, as was announced by Mike Elko. Colorado has a very legitimate chance and path to the college football playoff and the Big 12 title game. But first thing they got to do is win out. Then they're going to need a little bit of help, but not much, because right now they're tied for second in the conference. So if they win out, Colorado has a very legitimate chance of being in the Big 12 title game with a chance to play their way into the college football playoff either by or hosting the first round against a 12 seed, which will likely be the the Group of Five champion that gets in. Indiana looks like they're all but in the playoff right now. They're 9-0. They have an opportunity. They can stumble and probably still get their way into the playoff. So huge for Indiana. LSU-Alabama feels like an elimination game right now because both teams have suffered bad losses. And so the loser of this game has no path to Atlanta and therefore, to me, has no path into the playoff. Penn State set a record with 111,000 people in their game versus Ohio State. And that is the two-minute drill. And that is also the wrap-up for the podcast today. Again, this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson. So glad you guys stay with me for this hour and 10 minutes. Happy Election Day. Again, happy Tuesday for those of you who are grinding hard nose to the grind. Welcome into the next week of the NFL. This is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.